On May 24, Pope Francis issued the Laudato Si, letter to the Catholic Church worldwide. In it, he said this: climate change is a global problem with grave implications, environmental, social, economic, political, and for the distribution of goods. To discuss how Wisconsin Catholics are responding to that call to action, my thanks to John Hipscher, Executive Director of Wisconsin Catholic Conference, and Father Michael Irwin of St. Catherine Drexel Parish in Beaver Dam. Gentlemen, thanks very much for coming in to discuss the Holy Father's May encyclical.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it begins this way. Let's begin with a quote from one of the first paragraphs. Earth cries out to us because the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed her. We have come to see ourselves as her lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. The violence present in our hearts, wounded by sin, is also reflected in the symptoms of sickness evident in the soil, in the water, in the air, and in all forms of life. We have forgotten that we ourselves are dust of the earth. Well, we have a new pope with a new style in Pope Francis. We've seen this on a number of issues. Were you gentlemen, as Catholic leaders, surprised by the tone of this? And give us a little history of the encyclicals, if I've got the word right.
Well, an encyclical is a letter, and it's the highest form of papal church teaching other than a statement from a council of the church. Popes have been writing encyclicals for centuries, mostly on internal church issues, but about 125 years ago, Pope Leo started writing what we call the social encyclicals on social issues of concern in society. Until 1961, these were letters to bishops. The Pope is Bishop of Rome, writing to other bishops. What started with John the 23rd in the 60s, Pacem in Terris, Peace on Earth, was written to all people of goodwill. And that's what this is. It's in the line of encyclicals written to everybody. This is not a letter only to Catholics. It's a letter to everybody on the earth, on our common home, and it's an invitation to dialogue. We have to talk among ourselves about how we, working together, are going to nurture this earth that is part of God's gift to us and for which we are responsible.
John, I'm going to ask a question as a non-Catholic. Does this encyclical then constitute the Church's, not laws, but teaching on a specific subject?
It's an important development of expression of papal teaching. And it's not that radically different. You can see threads of what the Pope is talking about, going back to Aquinas and earlier on the universal destination of goods, but he's certainly picking up and developing themes expressed by Paul VI, John Paul II, and Pope Benedict in recent years. So this is not revolutionary.
Father, you had mentioned you just got back from Alaska. Did this resonate with you as someone who had just seen the beauty of Alaska?
Very much so. I mean, our planet is gorgeous. It's a lovely place, and it's fun to go visit all different pieces of it and the like. But you go to a place like Alaska, which was wilderness and was a new state just 50 years ago, and now they've got six-lane highways and to transport you out to go see glaciers, but you can't see the glacier from the glacier information center anymore because the glacier is nowhere close to the information station anymore. It's retreating up the mountain because glaciers are retreating and
because
it seems to be
change.
Speeding
it's,
up.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, I understand. Is the tone of this, did it surprise you? Because it is a clear call to action. You know, I've read most of it. It's a 246 paragraph, 40,000 word, but did the tone of imperative surprise you, John?
Not really. Again, I think if you look back at what's been said in recent decades, there's a growing awareness in the church, as there is throughout the world, that our common home is in trouble, and we need to be more vigorous and vigilant in how we take care of it and how we live our lives personally to further or inhibit the effort of taking greater care of creation.
As well as in the United States, we don't talk about environment as much, though we do a lot for the environment. We don't talk about it as clearly anymore. Other parts of the world, though, Europe and South America, from which the Pope is from, they are talking about these issues much more clearly. So some of that imperative and clarity comes from his perspective from South America and from Europe.
Well, you've been following, as I have, some of the reaction to the papal encyclical, and I'm just going to quote Jeb Bush, former Florida governor and one of 16 now Republican candidates for president. Jeb Bush said, "I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or my pope. I think religion ought to be making us better as people and less about things that end up getting in the political realm." Mr. Bush is respectfully saying he's a practicing Catholic, as we know. He's saying that this is the Pope meddling in politics. Your reaction?
Well, I'm all for putting religion first when you're hanging out at a religion, but you just get into the first page of the Bible and they're already talking about the environment. You know, they're already talking about creation and how creation was meant to be good, and then our relationship with creation, our relationship with one another. All of that's within the first two chapters of the book. So it's kind of hard, actually, I think, to study religion and certainly Judeo-Christianity without talking about the environment or necessarily the public policies that go behind that environment.
Can I ask if either of you gentlemen has heard any comments similar from Wisconsin Catholics to Mr. Bush's comments that this is a meddling, improper crossroads of theology and politics?
Well, I think certainly in the last 50, 60 years, there has been a lot more political engagement by the church. And so people who grew up in that environment, who are maybe weary in some ways of all the other arguing we do as a culture, you know, see that maybe the church, instead of necessarily resolving issues, are just feeding into the level of argument, maybe. And that can maybe be a perspective, but these are important issues. You know, what you read about in that first paragraph at the beginning of the show, this is important. You know, the rate of species going extinct, the rate of glaciers shrinking is important. And so, you know, all of us would love peace and tranquility. I love visiting monasteries and going on quiet retreats. But that doesn't excuse us from having to deal with reality, and sometimes that requires arguing with each other.
John, you work in the Capitol a great deal. You've heard some of the debate between the D's and R's over climate change and related issues. Is the Pope a Democrat on climate change, my friend?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think the Pope's bishops don't think in political partisan categories. I think the Pope is articulating Catholic teaching and reflecting on the world around him through a religious lens. And that's what this document is I'm taking my religious values, my moral principles, looking at the world in which I live, and inviting other people to talk with me in religious and other terms about it. That's not a Democratic response. That's not a Republican response. That's a very Catholic response.
And like John Paul II before him, he connects our interest in the vulnerable within the environment, you know, various vulnerable species, to the connection to the vulnerable in our society, which is the poor, and the vulnerable, such as unborn children. And so he connects the dots through all of these things. And I think so he's thinking in categories that aren't necessarily what we would call Democratic or Republican. They're more crossed over than that.
Okay.
And I would add, that's very consistent with our Wisconsin tradition. If you think about the people who contributed to our legacy of care for the environment, you see them in both parties, both here and nationally. And so I don't sense at all that this is a partisan issue and that in speaking in favor of stewardship of resources, the Pope is taking sides here.
Well, you're talking about Senator Nelson starting Earth Day, our legacy here, and the Knowles Stewardship Fund, things like that.
Right,
John?
Yes.
Well, on June 18th, Bishop Morlino responded to this, and he encouraged, I want to read what he said. I would encourage everyone to take the time and with an open mind and open heart to read the encyclical for themselves. It is rather long and it won't be an easy read, but don't allow pundits or reporters, even ones you might trust, to tell you what the Pope's letter is or isn't about or what it says. Is it realistic, gentlemen? This encyclical is about 40,000 words. I set out to read it this morning, and I only got about a half, two-thirds before other chores interrupted. Is it realistic to ask your parishioner's father to read 40,000 words?
Well, first off, as John was saying before we got together here, it's a very readable document. It's not filled with a lot of technical language that is going to necessarily slow a person down.
It's an impassioned call to action, as a wordsmith.
And I'm sure there's many people who would polish off novels much longer than this in the course of sitting on a beach. Yeah, it's kind of fun to sit on a beach. As I was up in Alaska enjoying my vacation, reading this encyclical about protecting this beautiful creation, is actually a nice little get-together of ideas. But most churches also have leaders, priests and deacons and lay leaders, who will distill down some of this and put it out in chunks also. So that helps people to get some of the main themes within this encyclical.
I think Bishop Morlino was only echoing what the Pope himself wrote near the end of the document, which he encouraged people to read it. And I think, you know, we'll get into when we talk about lifestyle in a few minutes, perhaps. I think the Pope understands, and we should all understand, that this is a conversation that is not going to end in a week or in a semester. Leo XIII wrote the first social encyclical in 1891. It took probably 20 years. You started to see some of the responses to what he said about the condition of labor to be enacted in Wisconsin and other places where the progressives started to succeed. And then 20 years after that, before we had the responses of the New Deal, reflecting many of the things that Leo talked about. So this is not a topic du jour. I think the Pope is anticipating an ongoing conversation that will take a long time to get started, and then will play out. We hope that it will have a long shelf life, because the earth, we hope, has a long shelf life.
Well, how does this encyclical, thoughtful, emotional, and passion, how does it cut through the 24/7 news cycle and the 30-word soundbite that a lot of Americans live by now, gentlemen?
And I think that's exactly what he challenges, is the impasse we've come to on environmental issues, because we aren't spending enough time to really push through the whole thing. I think our own attention deficit that we have as kind of a societal norm is keeping us from handling a whole bunch of different issues. But he would see that as related to our problem that we don't get that we are from the dust of the earth. We don't feel the dust of the earth. We don't slow down and be with the earth. And because of that, I think we live at this frenetic pace. They're all interrelated issues.
And one way we cut through it, and popes before him have said the same thing, is we witness by the manner in which we behave, yes, and the way we talk about and come at these issues. So if we start to model the thoughtful conversation and dialogue, and start to model a sincere reexamination of how we treat the earth, that has a way of being contagious over time. That was the case with Rerum Novarum on the condition of labor, and there's no reason it can't be the same way now. And I think the Pope, when you read the final paragraphs, he's very hopeful about what we as people will be capable of doing in terms of saving and improving our common home.
And he includes two prayers at the end that he hopes, prayer for the earth and et cetera. But here's my question. John, you indicate that some of these encyclicals have a lifespan of years and decades, correct?
Sure.
But the language in here, especially in paragraph 21, here's my question. Do we have that long, when he writes things like this, the earth, our home, is beginning to look more and more like an immense pile of filth. That conveys an urgency. Is there any dissonance there in the long lens approach versus the immediacy of dealing with, in his words, a pile of filth?
Well, I think he's certainly saying we have to take this seriously and start paying attention to it now, and start talking among ourselves about how all of us in our daily choices and in our broader public policies are going to take better care of the earth. So I don't know that that's incompatible with having a layperson take as much time as they need to read this and think about it as it is for those of us who do this on a regular basis to maybe give it a higher profile and join others who are already telling us we have to act quickly. I don't think they're incompatible. Indeed, I think they're complementary.
He says, and this is in paragraph 53, we still lack the culture needed to confront this crisis. Hmm. Father, how do you take this bite size and relate it to your parishioners?
That is a wonderful question, because I think that has to do with living in right relationships, which in the Gospel of Luke is something spoken about on a regular basis. is how can we live in right relationships? What's curious is Jesus would use as many environmental, agricultural terms to teach us how to live in right relationships. And for us to slow down and stop and think about that, you know, to say that, okay, if we had faith the size of a mustard seed, that's a concept that a lot of people know even outside of Christianity, of a line that Jesus uses. That so to sit and think with a little mustard seed, or pick your own little seed from the garden, and think, if I believed in the future, believed in myself, believed in my church, believed in my city, as much as, you know, this, just this little bit, as big as this little seed, it's amazing the amount of things we could get done. And I think that's the cultural shift we need, mm-hmm. is to truly have faith in ourselves. And I think, but again, that's another environmental issue. It's all woven together.
Have you begun in your own church giving these little sound bites, challenging your parishioners to make a difference that this letter from the Holy Father calls for, sir?
Well, I think, again, because so much of this existed beforehand, we've been doing this for a while at our congregation. We had a major decision in Beaver Dam. We merged three churches into one. They originally were based on three different immigration and language groups that would no longer clearly exist, and so there was a decision to merge. But obviously that created some hard feelings, and so there was some thought as to whether or not we should build a new complex to get better energy efficiency from that complex, mm-hmm. as well as to heal some of those rifts, you know, which is, again, such a classic American rich world way of thinking about things, that, you know, we are going to buy something and it's going to help us feel better about ourselves, you know, as opposed to maybe trusting a little bit more in God, having some hard conversations, having some good conversations with each other, building reconciliation, keeping the older buildings as opposed to ripping them down, which is, and to otherwise take a giant cornfield and where there's hawks, you know, spinning overheads. These are the choices we had. We ended up choosing to stay in the city, close to the people, have our reconciliation with each other through a retreat, and then be able to make our buildings higher efficiency, but otherwise make a lighter footprint environmentally. So this is what, for Catherine Drexel and Beaver Dam, has been our parish's trajectory for the last 5 years. So some of this just builds off of that and takes it a step further.
So. But if you get a parishioner to think like the Pope hopes we all think, she or he could bring to you specific questions like, should I put a solar energy unit on my roof? Number one, should I buy a Prius? When I'm asked whether I want plastic or paper bags in the grocery store. So is there any advice you can give when faced with those basic practical questions?
Well, I think, you know, there's so much out there right now on the internet and other teachings about how to be more efficient environmentally. The Pope, you know, gives some basic ideas here, you know, simple ideas of, you know, taking off your jacket instead of jacking up the air conditioning. Or in our church, you know, instead of having our doors closed and air conditioning on for mm-hmm. a half hour weekday liturgy, we instead turn off the air conditioning, open the doors, and do it that way. So there's some very practical things we know. I guess I'm a child who grew up during the 70s, during the energy crisis of the 70s. Maybe all these things are so clear in my brain because of that. But there's so many possibilities to live life more efficiently.
John, is the conference, as a result of this letter from the Holy Father, is a conference organizing some ways that local priests such as Father can begin to teach on this issue and ways to enact some of the changes that Pope Francis once made?
Well, at the national level, the bishops already, they've been funding an office called, I think it's the Catholic Campaign for Climate Change. And there's been a lot of education at the national level around calling attention to climate change as an issue. Now, here locally, the encyclical came out at the end of May. At the June board meeting, we worked out a plan. We're going to have a consultation in October with Father Irwin and 20 people like him from around the state who've read the encyclical. We're going to reflect on what it means. We're going to identify, with the help of other people, some major environmental issues facing the state, and then present the bishops at their fall board meeting. Here is what we have heard. Here are some opportunities to engage some of these issues at the policy level. Now, in terms of a blueprint for how parishes would respond, I think each diocese will probably be having internal conversations. And, you know, there's a parish like the one in Beaver Dam in probably every diocese where some good practices can be held up, and those conversations will continue. I mean, we've already had in my own parish at St. Denis, a very active layperson has been talking about this at parish meetings for a while now. And so the consciousness is raising.
Were you surprised that in the encyclical, the Pope questions the ability of the media to accurately discuss some of these issues? Reading here from paragraph 47, "Furthermore, when media and the digital world become omnipresent, their influence can stop people from learning how to live wisely, to think deeply, and to love generously." And then one more sentence, "Efforts need to be made to help these media become sources of new cultural progress for humanity and not a threat to our deepest riches." Is the takeaway from the Holy Father that don't trust the media on these environmental issues, gentlemen?
I think it's a recognition of the, you know, Father's alluded to it several times, of this rapid pace that we find ourselves caught up in. And you have to cover today's story, but there's another one tomorrow. So how well can you get into the depths and the nuances of issues, and how can you sustain the interest? That's that 24/7 cycle you alluded to.
Yes.
So I think the Pope says we can't approach it that way. We have to be reflective, and we have to be sustained. This is a multi-season event, not a one-week special in television terms.
Do you see Wisconsin Catholics as open and receptive to the message? Because in paragraph 224, he talks about sobriety and humility. Once we lose our humility and become enthralled with the possibility of limitless mastery, over everything, we inevitably end up harming society and the environment. I apologize for my speech problems. Is there a receptivity for this message?
I think there's a receptivity. I think it would help if we start from all the positive changes we've already made. When I was a child, I don't remember many cranes around. And we had these sandhill cranes were just starting to be reintroduced at that time. And we've stayed with that project a good many years, because you can see I've gotten a lot older. And in fact, now you go out to any kind of environmental area, the sound of sandhill cranes are everywhere, much less other cranes that have been developed as well. We've proven the ability to stay with things before, and we've made some tremendous progress as a people. I think what's going to be most challenging for us is to think outside of the United States. I've had to challenge people from the pulpit to get themselves a passport and go anywhere, you know, just to understand the U.S. from outside of the U.S. Because otherwise, we don't tend to think about the rest of the world. You know, so much of our newscasts every day in the U.S. focus only on U.S. news, and then they reduce it back to how does this affect people in my town and my media market. You know, I think we've got to find a way to get out there with this other media sources and truly utilize globalization in a positive way to understand how our decisions in the United States and Wisconsin, you know, affect people in Africa, affect people in South America. How does our trade with China affect the environment? We need to be able to think outside of ourselves in order to address many of the issues that the Pope is raising within this encyclical.
Do you think, let's pursue the news coverage just a minute. Do you think when news consumers on TV hear, as we do, about flooding in the South, drought in California, earthquakes, do they make a connection to climate change? And is that appears to me to be a connection that the Holy Father wants them to make. Are they making that connection now, do you think?
I think you're right unfortunately in our society we have really dug into the D and the R issue. And then people tend to watch media sources that align only to their previous point of view, and then they will just go deeper into their point of view. And I think that seems to be the dynamic right now.
As a veteran of the Capitol, John, do you see more alignment along DNR and we're not listening to anything else beyond the R&D label, John?
The people elected in the Capitol have always reflected the society that elects them. And what he just described in the society is reflected in the Capitol. And I think that's a challenge, but it's a challenge we can deal with. It's a challenge that we can learn from and move on. I think, you know, going back to the news stories about the different disasters or meteorological events, I think there's a greater awareness, A, that these things may be connected, that science is telling us how they're connected. And this is a teachable moment, and the Holy Father has grasped that teachable moment and tried to offer a very valuable insight into how we deal with it.
Because that actually goes back to the fact that we are relatively wealthy these days compared to world history. And with our technological developments and transportation options, it allows us to choose where to live. So that's part of why we are so polarized, that in my family, there's eight of us kids, you know, those who wanted to live in more of a progressive area moved from the hometown to the progressive area. Those who want to be more conservative moved to more conservative areas. Some moved to more Northwoods. Some went out to the Southeast. So people move according to their personalities, according to their politics, and that creates communities that really are polarized, you know, or into their own ideological views. And that's, you know,
that only works up to a point. And the Holy Father's point is, at the end of the day, the earth is our common home, and we're all going to live here. And you can run, but you can't hide. And the problems and the needs in one area will affect us all and are affecting us all. And only acting together as members of the same family are we going to get, are we going to make the world a truly fit place for all of us to live in.
Did this encyclical give the Catholic Conference one more thing? Did it add to your capital agenda? I'm speaking here because of the paragraph 232, not everyone is called to engage directly in political life, which the Catholic Conference does. Society is also enriched by a countless array of organizations which work to promote the common good and to defend the environment, whether natural or urban. As a result of the encyclical, do you have an expanded mandate in terms of the capital, John?
Well, the bishops will determine our mandate. I think certainly the expectations are there, and I think the Pope has reminded us of what we can offer in terms of their biblical and theological tradition and in the experience of Catholics and our neighbors in how we can do a better job of being stewards of creation. So yes, I think that that's a challenge and an opportunity, and I anticipate that we'll look for ways to live up to that.
I'm going to ask you, do you see good news? Is there a hopeful message in this? And maybe I'll jumpstart it this way on paragraph 71, where he talks about Noah, going back to the Genesis. In this way, God gave humanity a chance of a new beginning. And this is a line that really caught my attention as someone who admires words. All it takes is one good person to restore hope. So talk to me about the encouraging or the good news message in this letter. Anything else?
I think there's a lot of good news within it. I think there's been a lot of people, again, on both sides of the political aisle, who have been concerned that the environment isn't being talked about enough, that preserving species isn't being talked about enough, and that we could have dialogues as to, you know, improving that situation that in a way that's politically and economically possible. It doesn't bankrupt companies. It doesn't, keep people like me from going to Alaska. You know, hopefully we can still live life and live life with zeal, but be able to do it while preserving this planet for the next 1,000 years or next 1,000,000 years. You know, to think long term here, and it's very doable, and it's fun that the Pope comes out there with great excitement, knowing it's doable, and maybe gets us rejuvenated to handle all those issues at the same time.
We're almost out of time, so my next question concerns the crossroads between theology and politics. Should, as we approach the 2016 campaign season, we'll be electing a president, a U.S. senator, and members of the Wisconsin legislature, should voters ask these candidates some of the environmental questions from this letter from the Holy Father? John?
By all means. I mean,
by all means.
The presidential elections are about the common good and those issues and facts that affect all of us. And the earth, we all breathe the same air, we all drink the same water, we till the same soil. We all have a stake in a healthy environment. So it's very important that we ask those who would aspire to lead us how they're going to foster our ability to do those things.
Is this a accountability that you will speak to in your homilies in terms of asking your parishioners to have a environmental litmus test for those that want their votes, sir?
Well, this is one component of all the different ethical considerations that need to be brought into choosing a leader. It has to do with economic sustainability, has to be mutual respect between all peoples, including the unborn, has to do with can we make our planet sustainable. There's a whole spectrum of ethical issues that your average Catholic needs to pray about, weigh within their minds, so that we can make progress as a global community.
Well, let's close with one of the final paragraphs in the encyclical, that word that I'm having trouble with. God, who calls us to generous commitment and to give him all our all, offers us the light and the strength needed to continue on our way. In the heart of this world, the Lord of life, who loves us so much, is always present. He does not abandon us. He does not leave us alone, for he has united himself definitely to our earth, and his love constantly impels us to find new ways forward. Praise be to him. So this is a message you're both going to carry to Wisconsin Catholics.
Amen. Yes. Amen. Yes.
And maybe a final question. 5-10 years from now, you would hope that this encyclical generates what change? John, you want to go first?
I think a greater societal consensus that we as human beings, our behavior does affect things like the climate, and by living more responsibly and taking greater care of the earth, we will see an improvement.
Father?
I think it's going to add to the globalization phenomena and a dialogue happening at the globalization that allows us to share this planet, as John says, and have that as part of our global conversation of how we are together protecting our planet.
Thank you. I want to thank John Hubscher, and I want to thank Father Michael Irwin for participating in a very serious and respectful dialogue. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.